Hey everybody, real quick before we start, do not forget to enter the Be a Corecast Host for a Day contest. The lucky winner, you guessed it, gets to host their very own episode of Corecast. The contest ends September 26th, so make sure to enter by sending your name and email address to corecast@usgs.gov. That's CoreCast at usgs.gov. Learn more about the contest by listening to episode 60 of Corecast at usgs.gov/corecast. Remember, we're only using your contact info for the purposes of picking a winner. If you're under 18, get your parents' permission. USGS employees and their immediate families are not eligible. Good luck, and enjoy this episode of Corecast.
Welcome to the second in a three-part USGS Corecast series discussing the California sea otter with Dr. Tim Tinker. Thanks for joining us again, Tim.
Oh, you're very welcome.
In our last interview, you talked about how the sea otters almost became extinct. What actions are being taken now to protect them?
Right. Well, there are a number of specific actions have been taken. One of them was to actually alter the shipping lanes in California to make sure that most ships, particularly those ships carrying oil, go farther offshore so that if there is a spill, there will be a better chance of containment. There also have been a variety of less noticeable regulations that affect how petroleum products are moved about and shipped about and handled in California. Probably the biggest action that was taken was to establish a separate colony of sea otters through a translocation in the Channel Islands of California and San Nicolas Island, which is sort of the most remote of the Channel Islands down south of Santa Barbara there. A colony of otters was established there in the late 1980s so that if there were a big oil spill that occurred and wiped out most of the mainland population, there would still be a separate colony of otters that could be used for recolonization. That colony has remained very small, so there's still only about 40 animals there. It is continuing to grow, so hopefully eventually there will be a more substantial population there. And that was probably the most, the single biggest action that was taken. But other than that, there's just a lot of the general protections that are afforded to species that are on the endangered species list in terms of protection from incidental takes.
There's a recent USGS sea otter survey, and it shows that the growth rate for the sea otter has slowed in recent years. Can you explain why that's happening?
In all honesty, we don't know exactly what causes the sea otter population growth rate to increase or decrease over time. What we can say for sure is that really over the last 50 years or so, that the growth rate in the California population has been much slower than the growth rate of recovering populations in, say, in Alaska or Washington or British Columbia, which can grow as fast as about 20% a year. California has never grown faster than about 5% a year. But even with a slow growth rate, we tend to see fluctuations over time. So in the late 1990s, for instance, we actually had a period of decline for about 5 years. This was a period of significant decline and caused a great deal of concern. Around 2000 or 2001, the population began to increase again. And it was increasing, reached a rate of increase of about 5% a year. So we were once again encouraged that it seemed to be recovering and was headed in the direction that might eventually allow us to delist it. But over the last couple of years, that rate of increase appears to have slowed based on our range-wide surveys that we do every year. Again, we don't know the specific reasons why this happens, these fluctuations, except for the fact that it has to do with changes in the mortality rate of animals, not in the birth rates. The birth rates of sea otters seem to be very constant, and constant both between populations and constant over time. So they are producing pups at the rate that they should be producing pups. It just seems that sometimes they tend to start dying faster. And exactly what specific factors are causing these increases in mortality is one of the sort of the goals of our study to try and find out.
Would someone living in a watershed that drains the Pacific Ocean affect sea otters by putting too much fertilizer on their lawn?
Oh, that's right. They're definitely affecting the sea otter. They're probably affecting a lot of other marine species as well. Sea otters are what we refer to as a sentinel species, which simply means that they're, by virtue of being fairly high profile and in the public eye, and also quite relatively easy to study, or at least compared to a lot of other marine mammal and marine bird species, we can learn a lot through sea otters that will tell us about other species in the ecosystem that are perhaps much harder to study or lower profile. So yes, the person washing their car or fertilizing their lawn or dump, hopefully not, but possibly dumping oil down into a storm drain, these are all going to affect the sea otter directly, and they're going to affect the habitat and a lot of other species directly as well. But sea otters sort of give us a canary in the coal mine, if you will, that really lets us know that things are not as well as they should be.
Well, thanks for joining us again for another episode of CoreCast, Tim.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
CoreCast is a product of the U.S. Geological Survey, Department of the Interior.